And we're back. And thankfully our guest is here to rescue me so my voice can take a break. Friends, you're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Again, our apologies. We got some kind of weird computer problem. Luckily, the microphones work and the phones work, but the computer is running. I'm seeing things moving, but we're not hearing anything. So hopefully we will get that fixed up sometime here soon. Let's talk about AI, and we're going to welcome back a guest that we've had on our program before, although it's been a while, Dr. Shamir Wilson from Penn State. And first off, Dr. Wilson, let's make sure your microphone works. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Scott. Great to be here.
And it works. So, thank goodness. I love technology. And it's interesting. We're going to talk about AI and technology. And so when things go haywire, like what's happening with that computer behind my shoulder, of course, I'm looking at these AI stories and thinking, oh, wonderful. I can't wait till those computers go haywire. But we'll maybe touch on that later on. First off, now, we had you on, and I forgot to look this up, like November of 2023, I think it was.
That sounds about right. I don't think the snow had started yet.
Yeah, that's about right. So 14 or 15 months ago, we had you on now to talk about AI. And we've had some AI stories recently, and I thought, okay, let's do a follow-up. Let's see where we are. First off, let's find out about you. Tell us something about yourself, your background. What do you teach over at Penn State? Tell us about you.
Sure. So I've been faculty at Penn State for just over 6 years now, starting on my seventh year. And my research is in artificial intelligence and digital privacy. So I teach and I do research on those topics. And over on the AI side, my research is specifically in something called natural language processing, which is the branch of AI that's all about getting computers to do something useful with human language. And that's been booming recently, I think, in the public eye, where we have these technologies like ChatGPT that people use human language to interact with, to ask questions and get responses from.
Okay. Now, do you work with students, or are you a researcher? What do you do exactly, you know, kind of over there?
Oh, the answer is yes, in both, actually.
Both. All right.
So it's a thing that a lot of folks don't know. A lot of the fundamental academic research that happens at universities is actually performed by students who are being directed and managed by faculty like me. So I do some of the work, but they do a lot of the work, and they get a lot of the credit for the innovations that we see coming out of universities.
Such as? Well, I mean, innovations such as, I don't know, stuff that your groups have been working on, such as, give us an example.
Give us an example. So that might require me to be more brilliant than I am, but my lab does a lot of research recently on ways that people can, basically technologies that we can build that can help people better understand digital privacy. So think about the privacy policies that you read on websites, for example, or don't read, as most people don't. We've built some technologies to bridge that gap between what's there and what people know so that they make better informed decisions. And over on the side of AI and NLP, natural language processing, we've been doing a lot of work recently trying to understand the biases that these chatbots have for and against various demographics, as they inherit those biases from the data that they were trained on, which is typically the internet. And sometimes people aren't nice to each other on the internet. So technologies like ChatGPT need to be fine-tuned and tweaked to avoid them inheriting those biases.
Now, since we've had you on, which I'm guessing was like 14 months ago, how much have things changed in 14 months? A little, a lot, a gigantic amount? Mm-hmm. How much has changed in 14 months?
I think to some extent that depends on who you ask. Some people would say that AI is just changing enormously every single month. Some people would make the time frame a little bit longer. But I believe we had ChatGPT and a lot of other large language models, LLMs, back then. They've continued to improve and to gain capabilities, while at the same time we're still discovering their limitations, the things that they don't do well or the things they fundamentally can't do yet.
Okay. I guess this is sort of an open-ended question. Just for folks that really aren't familiar with this, they probably have heard AI, have no idea what that is. Mm-hmm. Give us a definition of what artificial intelligence right now is. What if you had to define it for somebody, what would that be?
Sure. That's difficult, but I can give you some background why it's difficult, and maybe that'll be helpful. So it's a term that we've had since, I believe, the 1960s, and there's a sort of a witty definition of it, which is things that we do with computers and algorithms that don't work well yet. So once something works well, we forget that a computer can do it. Apparently, weird studio problems are still a thing. Yeah. But I'll try for something more direct. AI, the term that we use, typically refers to trying to build something resembling human intelligence into a computer. What counts as human intelligence can vary widely, though. So AI has been used as a term to refer to everything from, let's say, building flight itineraries. You want to get halfway around the world and find the right flights that minimize discomfort. That turns out to be a difficult problem in a large scale. To the sorts of things that we're doing now with Google search, where you plug in a few words, you plug in a question, and it doesn't just give you related pages, it gives you some kind of summarized answer. And also, somewhere in between those things are technologies that identify things in images, like find cars in an image, find faces, identify who a person is. So it's a broad category of things that typically require a lot of data input to train some kind of system to do a task well.
Maybe, now this may be an unfair question, but maybe we need to get a definition of intelligence? What exactly is intelligence?
And that's a great question.
So, for instance, is my dog intelligent?
I think I'd say yes, and what's going on behind that, though, are some questions about what it means to use any of these words, really. And I feel it'd be unfair to say a dog's not intelligent. Same thing for cats, by the way. What does that mean for a dog? Well, you and I could discuss that, where we say it looks like a dog's thinking about something, and I'd be willing to say a dog is thinking about something. Maybe different things than a human. But then there we start to have to examine, well, what is intelligence? Because humans are capable of many different things than dogs.
All right. I think my dog is intelligent, Doctor. All right. I take him outside, and he has a stick, and I'm like, hey, give me the stick, and he runs away. I'm thinking, okay, he wants to play a game. That's pretty intelligent. So are these computers right now as intelligent as my dog? You know what I mean? How far along? I'm assuming there's a spectrum. Either you or somebody has put together a spectrum. Okay, here's the artificial intelligence spectrum. Right now we're here, and I'm pointing not far from the starting point, as opposed to whatever the heck is over here on the far end. Where are we on the spectrum? Is there a spectrum? Has somebody put together some spectrum of some kind?
My guess is if we looked at the literature, there'd be a few different spectrums, and we wouldn't be able to agree on them. So what does intelligence mean? Well, I think it means something different when we're talking about dogs, talking about humans, talking about AI. And there's some overlap there, and I think your dog's going to be able to do some things that an AI system can't, and actually vice versa as well. So it would be difficult to put it on one scale. I think we need something more complicated. And there are scales like IQ, for example, but those have been shown to have some pretty bad limitations, both in terms of what they can actually measure and bias against different groups of humans. So it's just too difficult of a problem to reduce. We can say something's intelligent, and maybe sometimes you can say there's more demonstrated intelligence between two similar things. But for two very different things, that's a really tough problem.
I've never been an IQ fan. I've seen people that, I've got a 170 IQ, and I'm thinking, okay, can you do this? No. Okay, well, then your IQ is worthless. Or I'll come across somebody that's only 100, but they can do things I can't do. So to me, it's like that guy's more intelligent than I am when it comes to, I don't know, fixing something or something like that. Never been an IQ fan, so okay. Let's not use that as a measurement. I've noticed in web browsers, and I'm looking at a computer screen here in our studio, if I put in a simple search on a web browser, it's different than it was a few months ago. All right, talk about those differences. What are, you know, AI and web browsers, which if you have a computer or a phone or something, you're probably using a web browser like every day. Mm-hmm. What has changed there in the last, I don't know, a few months?
Sure, and the changes I think you're speaking about are sort of the web browser, but they're actually more the search engine, which is the website that the web browser is going to pull information together off of the internet. And I agree, there have been some substantial changes over the past few months, or maybe over the past year, where some of the major search engines, I can say particularly Google, have started producing AI summaries of search results that appear at the top of the search results. So before you see the list of websites that are relevant to the thing you typed in, you see some kind of summary that Google's AI system put together of what's down there.
Okay. And I've noticed that. And it's always at the top of the screen. You know, I put in something, and it comes up, of course, really fast, like, mm-hmm. boom, there it is. So again, let's dig a little deeper. Again, from the old, can I call it old? Because I'm old enough to remember before the internet, okay. From the old version of searching to the AI, I mean, what's different? What's the difference between the two? What's going on?
Sure. I'll point out the internet is really old, actually. It just didn't become useful until...
That version.
Yeah,
yes,
that
okay.
version, the
go.
Version that most
the
of
90s.
Us...
The 90s, okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, the 90s version. So what's different there? Well, we've seen major companies, Google and Microsoft, trying to make AI more of an offering in their products, trying to make them more useful through AI. So what they're doing is they're using these things called large language models, LLMs, which I mentioned earlier, to process the pages that are relevant to your search query and pull out of them kind of a summary. And when that works well, it can be great because, well, it might save you a lot of time reading those pages and finding the information you want. But there's an important caveat, which is those summarization methods are not perfect. And I've seen a lot of examples on social media over the past few months where people ask Google a simple question and that search summary turns out to be just blatantly wrong. So it's an evolving technology, and it's possible that the limitations aren't being communicated as well as they should. So we have to take those summaries with a grain of salt. And if we want to use them somehow, it's important to verify that information somewhere down below.
So, okay, so in other words, AI, we put a question to AI, and it goes out on the internet and gathers information really fast. Is that a layman's description of what AI does with, like, in a search engine and so on? So you mentioned that, okay, it goes and it gives you an answer that's just wrong. Does that mean the information that's out there in the internet that it went to go find is all wrong, or the AI just got it wrong? Which one is it?
Well, I'll point out, we're talking about a particular kind of AI built into search engines here, and there are lots of other kinds.
Right.
So with that bound, it could be either of those possibilities you mentioned. It could be that the summary somehow missed key information that was correct on a website and gave you the wrong answer. It could be the fundamental problem we've always had with the internet in terms of, research. There's lots of correct information, but there's plenty of incorrect information, too. So what broke exactly, you can't tell by reading the summary, necessarily.
All right. Now, you kind of touched on it because, you know, we still talk a lot about misinformation, okay, which either means information that's it's out there, it's just wrong, it's just inaccurate, or information out there that is intentionally wrong, people just spewing stuff, okay? So when the AI goes searching, it goes searching for that stuff. Is there some algorithm or something it's able to determine, yep, that's right, nope, that's wrong, or we haven't gotten that far yet?
So I'll make a distinction here that's useful. Misinformation and disinformation, mm-hmm. researchers in this area consider them to be different things, where disinformation is when someone's intentionally trying to mislead. So think propaganda, for example. And misinformation, well, the intent is not clear. It could be intended to mislead, but it's wrong either way. It might just be someone's mistake. So you're asking about algorithms to help separate out, well, that general category, misinformation, disinformation, from the correct stuff. And that's an area of ongoing research. to try to find patterns in language and presentation of information that indicate something could be wrong, perhaps inherent in what's written, perhaps comparing it to a bunch of other sources and using some kind of voting system. But fundamentally, that becomes another very difficult problem, because all that the AI system in Google knows is what it can get from the internet. And that could differ from real life.
So, okay, I'm going to go back to my question about what is intelligence. I'd like to think I'm intelligent enough that if I hit a situation, you know, when the show's over and we leave and I'm out doing something, I hit a situation where I need to come up with a solution, not necessarily drawing from other places. I've encountered this and I've got to come up with a solution on my own. Mm-hmm. Can an AI do that? Or does it have to rely on something somewhere else right now to help it out?
Okay, yeah, and that I think takes us back towards things like ChatGPT and comparison between that and the search engines. Well, ultimately, all the types of AI that we've discussed, so ChatGPT, search engines, a few other things, are relying on what we call training data, that is data from the real world. In the case of ChatGPT, lots and lots of text from across the internet that's sort of pulled in and used to train a model of how language works and what words are likely to follow each other. Something that's been built upon that by OpenAI and Google are features where that LLM, that model of language, can go out and pull stuff from the internet. So it's a combination of both, what's been built into a system and in more advanced systems that I'm describing, what they can pull from the internet. What I think you're describing is asking AI to help you plan something. And we've seen products like ChatGPT sort of able to do that. And how good of a plan you can get out of that depends somewhat on the sophistication of the question, but also somewhat on luck as well. So there are a few guarantees you can get out of modern AI that's trained statistically, basically on these large collections of data. And answers could be right, and sometimes they're wrong.
Actually, you mentioned a word there, training. And I've seen these stories like, okay, we're going to get this over here to train the AI to, I don't know, do something or get better or so on. What does that mean? I mean, I know how to train a kid on how to catch a ball or do a math problem or something. What is this training? What is that exactly?
Sure, and we're going to bring the dog back into the picture now.
All right, comes my dog.
So you train your dog to fetch, or you train your dog to sit, or you train them to heal. All these things that you train a dog to do, they require you to go through the actions multiple times, maybe dozens of times, maybe more. And every time you do that, there's probably going to be something slightly different. You're going to throw a different ball. You're going to throw it in a different direction. There's all these little variations. So imagine transforming all those little variations, that set of scenarios, into some kind of data, some kind of representation in numbers or in text. So those are training instances. And what you've done is you've given your dog enough instances to recognize when you're going to play fetch or when you want your dog to heal. So a similar thing is happening with AI models now, where we're giving them lots of examples of problems to solve. And based upon statistical methods of training, there's that word again, different for dogs than it is for AI, an AI system's able to generalize a little bit and then provide answers to questions that are similar to the ones before, but not quite the same.
Okay. Now, I've got a friend who I think is doing this. I do not want to do this, where there's a certain AI app, I guess, that if you talk enough, in other words, if I read something into a microphone, okay, it will somehow copy what I've said and learn from it. And then if I type in a script of some kind, like on a keyboard, it will talk like me. And you're nodding your head, and that scares the heck out of me. Describe this, please. What is this?
So I've not seen this particular app, but it doesn't surprise me that it exists. Same idea. So getting a lot of examples how you speak, how you enunciate all the vowels and consonants, how you put them together in sequences and the words, the accent that you have, because we all have accents of some kind. So put all that together and provide enough training data, and you can get an AI system to produce speech that sounds like you.
I'm not sure I like that. Some people love it. Oh, this is wonderful. This is great. I'm thinking, no, I'm me. I don't want some computer pretending to be me. Now, last week, someday I'd love to go to this thing, the Consumer Electronics Show, which is every January in Las Vegas. And I don't know, big convention center or something like that. It's there for a whole week. If you're a tech geek, again, this is like Nirvana for you. It's just all the new gadgets and gizmos. And apparently there's some, I don't know who they are, working on very realistic looking people, except they're not people, on a TV screen that can deliver the news for you or can do some other storytell for you. And it looks like a real person on your screen, but that is not a real person. So you're nodding your head. You know what I'm talking about here. How far along is that? That could put media people out of business.
And that kind of generation of video has, when I've seen it in the news, it's typically been because of problems that it causes. So deepfakes are a related phenomenon.
Right.
When someone produces a video of typically a famous person saying something or doing something that they never did. So the alternative is something that you just brought up, technology that's not intended to be malicious, but could change how we consume media. So it's an interesting idea, and maybe it has some purposes, but I don't really have a lot of judgment to make on it right now.
All right. Again, our guest is Dr. Shamir Wilson of Penn State, talking about AI this morning. You know, one thing, and I keep seeing these stories, and it normally involves either a high school kid or a college kid, where the deep fake, where there's a video that it looks like them, and usually they're doing something rather disgusting. And I'm thinking, and of course, somebody sees this and they're horrified. Now, first off, it's like, okay, that's not me. I didn't do that. But boy, it sure looks like you. Have you ever encountered anything like that?
I've not. It sounds like I'm glad that I didn't. I prefer to avoid disgusting things online. But what you're commenting on, just continuing on this topic, suggests and is something we know, that the technology to create these kinds of deepfakes is becoming more and more readily accessible. Where it used to take someone with a lot of computing resources, now it's pretty close to just downloading the right app and having some sample video to feed in so that the AI system knows what the person looks like.
Now, if our friend Jeff Byers was here, we've joked about this before. This is something I think he'd actually love. I think he'd think it's pretty cool. Where all I've got to do, I've got a keyboard sort of in front of me here. I went over the keyboard and typed out a story. And then I would plug it into an AI app, and the AI app would turn it into a movie. Characters and the whole nine yards. Now, I think, am I right, there's some kind of app right now that can do that, although I think it's only for 15 seconds or something really small. Is this ringing any bells? I'm wondering, could this be the future of Hollywood? You know, why should we have actors when we can just write out the script and the story, plug it into the app, there's our actors, we're done.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the general concept of video generation based upon a script. And the demos I've seen of it do involve videos that are pretty short, on the order of, as you said, 15 seconds or so. And it's the kind of technology that I imagine maturing so that eventually we'll get much longer videos. And they'll look more realistic. The demos I've seen still have typical computer-generated video problems, like too many fingers on hands. So that's, I imagine, something that's going to improve in the future and be used more often. What will happen to how we consume media, that is a huge question. And it's a philosophical question that I think about as well.
I mean, I've been doing this lately I don't do a lot of social media, but I do a little. And I see stuff on there and maybe certain websites, or I see little like ads and so on, and it's a picture of a person and I'm looking really close, like, is that a real person or is that a fake person? There's a lot of fake people out there, isn't there, Dr. Wilson? I think online right now, a lot of fake people.
For some value of a lot, which I don't know if we're prepared to quantify. But what you might be referring to are pictures in social media ads where the picture is AI generated and the person's AI generated. And I agree, I see those with increasing frequency. And they're still, to me, unnerving to see, to the extent that's probably a negative for the ad. But that will change over time, I imagine, where it becomes more difficult to tell. But you could also be referring to bots on social media that look like they're people and to some extent behave like they're people. That's a problem that social media companies have been dealing with for a few years now. Going back further, for a while, it was people running bot farms, which would take a lot of effort and imagine a lot of drudgery work. But now automating these bots is a thing that's becoming possible. So they, to some extent, look like humans on social media, you know, profile picture and then some interaction where they post stuff. But in reality, there's no one behind it besides, you know, a person running an AI farm of them.
A lot of attractive blondes. It's amazing how many of these fake people are attractive blondes. So, okay, I'm like, is that a real person? I don't think so. Do you know how many AI apps are there now? I know there's thousands of them. Is there a number right now?
I'm not aware of a number, and I think it would be difficult to come up with one because there are, on the one hand, apps that are AI-focused, where it's a big selling point when you look at it in the App Store that this is AI. But there are a lot of apps where AI is playing some role in the experience with the app, which isn't really primary. So think about the Google app, for example. We think of Google as a search engine that lets us do a few other things, but Google is increasingly using AI to support the products that we use. So you could sort of call that an AI app, but they're not really pitching it like that. Or think about other things like note-taking apps are increasingly incorporating AI presumably to help you, identify which notes are important quicker, to get summaries, things like that. But it's a note-taking app. We don't think of it as AI so much as augmented with AI. So it's becoming an ingredient in a lot of things that we do with technology, to the extent it's hard to set boundaries around and say this is AI and this is not.
Okay. Now, you mentioned ChatGPT earlier. Is that still, I guess, the most popular AI app? It gets mentioned a lot. Is that like number one on the list or something still?
No one's making a top 10 of these. Well, I'm sure some people are, actually. I'm not aware of an authoritative one like the, you know, the Billboard top 100.
Right. Okay. All right.
That would be a comparison. But ChatGPT does seem to be getting the most media attention.
Okay. So yesterday, I'm preparing for this interview at home, and I, you know, list my own questions and so on, and then I thought, oh, what the heck? So I've got ChatGPT on my phone, and I punched it up, and I put in a rather detailed question. I'm interviewing somebody to talk about AI. What should I ask them? More detailed than that. And yes, within seconds, 20 questions, I'm scrolling here, come popping up on my screen. I'm thinking, I'm looking over the 20 questions. I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. So, Dr. Wilson, I'm going to play ChatGPT here, and I'm going to ask a question, okay? How about, now this, again, sometimes I read this stuff, and I'm thinking, that is so fake. It is so plastic, the way it kind of puts sentences together and so on. Mm-hmm. But, okay. So here's one. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. This is from ChatGPT, not Scott. Okay. It says here, what role has increased computing power and data availability played in accelerating AI progress? It also can't talk in a few words. So that's a question I was going to ask, because we keep hearing about bigger computers, better computers, quantum computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much does some of that work together with AI? Like, our computers are somehow getting better. I'm assuming that's happening, yes?
Yeah, sure. And that question sounds like the sort of thing that OpenAI would love to answer in marketing materials. It's a glowing question, but there's meaning behind it, or I can infer meaning behind it at least, which is about the role of increased computing power in the capabilities of AI systems, and there's definitely a huge role. An interesting sort of historical note about the algorithms, that is, procedures that we use to make modern AI work, is that a lot of them were originally invented back in the 80s and 90s, and people just didn't know what to do with them yet, or there weren't enough computing resources to make them work well, or there wasn't enough data to train AI systems to make them actually useful. So speaking in particular about, if you've heard the term neural network, neural network is a specific type of AI, and at a very like fundamental low level, what sort of resembles what goes on in the brain, lots of differences, but there's some inspiration there. Neural networks have been around for ages, decades, but it was only over maybe just the past 10 years or so that we made a little bit more progress on the algorithms, but a lot more progress on the computing power and data collection to make them into the giants that we see today.
All right. Now, a long time ago, when I was a college kid, now this is over 40 years ago, for one semester I was a computer major. I just changed my major. I don't know, I got tired of broadcasting, and then I was an idiot and came back. But anyway, that's another story. So for one whole semester, I was a computer programmer. Now, this was like 1982, okay? And so I started to learn the programming languages, BASIC, Fortran, C++ came on, and so on. We're not still using those languages today, just with much better machines, or... is it this? You mentioned we've had some of this stuff for decades. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, these computer languages from 40 years ago, are they all dead? We have brand new languages now, or we're still using that stuff, but now it's way better.
A little bit of both. So you mentioned specific languages there. Some of them, like Fortran, you can actually make a lot of money being competent in, because there aren't that many Fortran programmers left. No, seriously.
No, I believe it.
There are computer languages which are used sometimes in very important systems in engineering and finance, with systems that have been around for decades, and someone needs to maintain them. No one wants to replace them yet. So we end up with folks being paid a lot of money to do those things. So you mentioned C++ also. That's still around. It's not really one of the most popular languages anymore. A lot of the languages that people use now to program AI systems have been around, I would guess, at least a decade or so. So it's not so much the languages that are making innovation as other things around them.
Okay. I keep hearing quantum computers. What is that exactly? Quantum just seems like this freaky, weird thing where strange things happen and things get done. What is quantum computing? Do you know?
Well, that's a little outside of my expertise. I can say briefly that quantum computing is using quantum properties of matter to do computing in fundamentally different ways, starting way down at the level of individual bits. So traditional computers, like the ones we have on our desk and our hands, they use bits, which are these tiny encodings of one piece of data, zero or one. Where a quantum computer relies on qubits, which are fundamentally different and can somehow represent more than one state. What that might help us do is find faster solutions to difficult problems, but getting that to the practical realm, that's still the topic of a lot of research and a lot of money.
Do you know, over on campus, is anybody doing something? I'm assuming somebody is, with quantum computing? Somebody doing something over there?
I don't know the names, but I imagine that someone is, just because Penn State is such a large research university. Anytime I go looking for something, I find it somewhere.
Okay. Now, I see these stories, and it's tied in with AI, I guess, is data centers, which I guess are these gigantic buildings filled with computers, and they need massive amounts of energy and massive amounts of other stuff. And folks, when I say big building, I mean a gigantic building. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, definitely.
Where are these things? They seem to be in suburban D.C. all over the place. We don't have one here, as far as I know. What are these things? And, like, is there one in Harrisburg? Where would we find these things?
Well, they tend not to be advertised because of a few reasons. One, just for security, you don't want bad actors to know where all of your expensive computers are and how to bring down your big software company. But also, there's not much reason for people not involved with them to know where they are. So it's an interesting thing when I drive long distances looking what's next to the interstate. I see these big buildings, low set, one floor. And the question in my mind when I look at them is, well, is this a warehouse or is it a data center? And sometimes you can tell if there are lots of trucks outside, then probably a warehouse because the goods are coming and going. If there aren't, what might be a data center instead? And from the exterior, I think often they look pretty similar. But you asked where they are, and there is a huge concentration of them in the D.C. area for various reasons. But they are also found in lots of rural places as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have a few of them in Center County that I don't know of them offhand. But placing them is often sort of an optimization problem because the company that builds a data center wants cheap electricity and cheap land.
Okay. And what does this data center do? Is it all about AI? It's just a big, giant AI building.
Well, we had data centers before the recent huge emphasis on AI in the past few years. Just more generally, a data center is this facility, this building that contains a lot of computers, and those are typically part of some kind of large company that provides cloud services. So there's a jargony term. If we're talking about cloud services, we're talking about computing services that are spread across lots of different computers that people typically interact with online. So not the computer on your desk, but a group of computers that are providing you some service like web search or e-commerce, online e-commerce. So data centers provide that functionality, but they also, they can do compute also. So they provide lots of AI resources as well.
Cloud computing was pretty much what you were just describing, I think.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, and there's a growing relationship between, we could say, AI in the cloud and cloud computing as similar things using the same resources.
Okay. I mean, there was a story recently, TMI, Three Mile Island, down near Harrisburg, where I lived near there when I was a kid, when it almost blew up. So I pay attention to TMI, which was supposed to be totally mothballed. They were going to turn it off. Mm-hmm. And now, apparently, they're going to turn it back on again because there's one company, and they're going to use all the power from this one reactor at TMI to power a data center. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you need one nuclear reactor to power one data center? I'm thinking, what are you doing in that data center? I mean, to call these energy hogs would be an understatement, apparently. These computers need a lot of power, I guess, right? To make it work.
Yeah, they do, and I don't know in that case whether the plan is to run the nuclear reactor at 100% and for all of that to go in the data center. But it is the case that data centers are using an increasing slice of the pie of the electricity that we produce.
I mean, a lot. I mean, these things are energy hogs. Wow. Mm-hmm. All right, one more question from ChatGPT. Let's have some fun, okay? Yeah. Now, this is not me. I didn't come up with this one. It says, what are some unexpected ways AI is being used today that might surprise people?
That's a great question.
That's an AI question. It's all about AI. I don't know, is there any surprising uses you've come across?
Surprising uses. Well, I can speak to something I see as a teacher. I think this is something that a lot of people are growing aware of, that ChatGPT and conversational AI are playing a role in the experience of students, because they're using these technologies to some extent to help them complete assignments, to some extent to replace their work sometimes. And the replacement of that work is sort of replacement of learning, which is problematic. But what might surprise people is this huge gray area in between that exists, where a student can use AI to help them learn and change his learning experience, but some learning is still going on. So what a lot of educators are having to navigate is how to incorporate AI into the learning experience so the student doesn't just glide through without learning anything, but they have this additional assistance that AI could potentially provide. So that's something I'm figuring out in my courses, how to give instructions to students that acknowledge, yes, they could go do all these things, but on the other hand, try to guide them towards being productive.
All right, we're almost done here. That's a follow-up question, all right? Over at Penn State, are there instructors, I keep hearing about this at the high school level, teachers or instructors, professors, that are scared or concerned that students are cheating and using AI stuff and turning it in as their own stuff? Is that a concern over there?
Oh, definitely. So that's what I was maybe hinting at without using the term. Some AI use can be cheating, where a student turns in work that the student says is their own, but actually ChatGPT just produced it. So the question becomes, though, how can we use these technologies to actually help people learn? Because there's lots of potential there, but it has to be done carefully and with guidance from the instructor, who hopefully has an idea, some idea of how these technologies work and can say, well, this is safe, this will actually help you, this won't help you. And that kind of guidance is something that's important. And I'll tack on to that, actually. I think it's important that we educate students how to use AI. We can't just avoid this for another reason, which is that when they get out into the workforce, they're going to encounter it there, and they're going to be expected to know how to use AI to help them do their jobs.
One final question before we let you go, and I appreciate your time this morning. I keep hearing about people are scared of AI. AI is going to do bad things. All right, and sometimes I wonder, okay, is that exaggerated? Let me throw it to you. Is there anything about this burgeoning whatever that we should really be concerned about or just downright scared of? Or is that just all hype?
Well, there are concerns because we have this very powerful set of technologies now, and we are even in sort of a period of, I like to use the term technological adolescence. Figured it out, but not we don't have the best judgment with it yet. So there are some concerns that that I try to address in my research about how AI systems can be biased for or against certain groups of people based on demographic markers, and that kind of harm is a subtle sort of harm that we need to pay attention to, so that everyone gets advantages from AI and some people aren't left out.
Dr. Wilson, again, appreciate your time. Normally, we don't talk 45 minutes straight, but with our little computer issue we have today, obviously, we're going to keep an eye on this, and I hope we can have you on again sometime.
Yeah, great conversation. Thanks, Scott.
You know, the next big breakthrough or whatever that turns out to be. So thank you very much
thank
again.
You.
All right. Scott here with you on Let's Talk 98.7.